Blackhawks host St. Louis. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service for this Wednesday, 3rd of December, sunny and seasonal. Today's high 37. Tonight, clear and cold, the low dropping back to 18. Thursday, cloudy, 20% chance of snow showers. Thursday's high 33. This morning, wind is from the west at 13. Sunshine, a blue sky, a little nippy. 25 degrees, both Racine and Kenosha. 22 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Wind chill 12 above. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. WGTD News time just about 8:11. The morning show with Greg Berg up next.
WGTD is supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu. Support for the morning show also comes to you from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD HD, your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. Today we are previewing for you a production about to open at the Racine Theater Guild of the last collaboration of the great Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein II, their musical, The Sound of Music. Portion of the original orchestral suite drawn from this wonderful score, a suite arranged by the great Robert Russell Bennett. Again, this is Rodgers and Hammerstein's The Sound of Music. And we welcome you to the morning show on WGTD HD. It's not morning, it's actually late at night. It is after 11 p.m. It's been a long night at the Racine Theater Guild for the cast and crew of
The Sound of Music. And this production is going to be opening to the public this Friday night. And I'm really happy to have with me in the lobby of the Theater Guild to talk for just a few minutes. First of all, the managing artistic director of the Racine Theater Guild, Doug Instanis, who's also the stage director of this production, and also Samantha Sustacek, who is in the lead role of Maria in The Sound of Music. So we welcome both of you to the morning show and appreciate you you being here. A long, late night, but a good night in a lot of respects. Doug, we're recording this on Monday night, and actually even ahead of the public seeing The Sound of Music, there will already be audiences here even before then. Tell our listeners what you are gearing up for.
Well, we have our preview final rehearsal on Tuesday, and then Wednesday at 9:15 in the morning, we open to our daytime performances for school shows. We try to do one performance each year around the holidays for school-aged children, and this year it's The Sound of Music. We will be doing 12 shows over 6 days, and we bus in school children from Kenosha, Oak Creek, and everywhere in between.
I wonder if you could just say a quick word, and I probably should have warned you that I was going to ask you this question, but here it goes. I know that for a long time there have been a number of people who wanted to do The Sound of Music, but for, I think, a really understandable reason, you've been pretty reluctant. Tell our listeners what kind of the source of your reluctance has been about the Theater Guild taking on this particular show.
Well, I think whenever there's been a movie that has been so loved for generations upon generations, you always get a little nervous about doing the stage show of it because the hills aren't alive. They are a drop in the back. Or we can't have Maria running through a stream, you know, as she's, you know, singing about her glorious days in the hills. It's on stage, and we move quickly from scene to scene. And so that kind of worries me a little bit when people have something in their mind and, well, this is the way they did it in the movie, and she did it like this, or he did it like that. So it's always a challenge to honor the movie and what people loved about the movie, but also to make it your own. And I don't want Samantha to be different than who she is. I don't want to say, well, watch the movie and do it just like the movie, because that's not what we do in theater. We interpret it and we make it our own, and we find things about ourselves that we find in the character, and we have a different set, we have a different choreographer, we have a different music director, and so we find different things. So it's always a challenge to honor what was done in the past and yet give it a fresh look, because if you see the movie, why come to see the stage play? Mm-hmm. I've already seen it. Well, you haven't seen it like this, and you haven't seen it with my people and on our set, and I think we've done a really good job of giving people what they expect, plus a bunch of surprises, and when you're so close to the action, I think people will really, really be pleased with our production.
Mm-hmm. I'm just curious, did you get worn down and just finally give in, or did you come to just sort of realize that, hey, this used to be a Broadway musical on stage before it became this famous movie that everybody's seen? I mean, did something click, or did you just feel like, let's go for it?
I think, you know, I get beaten down a lot, and then after a while I give up, you know. No. I think there really isn't a, besides my fear that people will want to see the movie, there really wasn't a good reason not to do it. We have the talent, we have the expertise to pull it off. We have some great singers, and we have some amazing kids, and we can do a nice set. So there really wasn't a reason, except for the fact of, you know, my perception of what audience members would feel about the comparison with the movie. I also think it helps when, you know, it was very popular with the Sound of Music Live that they just did. Mm. So I think it's time that we do it. I couldn't come up with a better suggestion. And everybody knows the music. And, you know, why is that? Well, because people love it. And so we should do it because people love it. It's around the holidays, and I think we can do it well.
Absolutely. Samantha Sustacek, you were one of a whole lot of talented people who came out to audition for this show and ultimately were cast in this crucial role of Maria. First of all, I don't remember the specifics, but I have this in the back of my mind, some recollection that this is a very special show for you and a special role that, I mean, it means even more to you than it otherwise might under more normal circumstances. Tell us what your connection is to this show and this role.
Well, I have wanted to play this role for a very long time. Half a lifetime ago, I auditioned for this show when I was in high school. And I was in it, but I played Marta, the seven-year-old, when I was 17. and I very much wanted to play Maria, but a good friend of mine ended up being cast in that role. And I was very disappointed and cried through my entire eighth-hour history class. So I was thrilled that the Theater Guild had decided to do the show. I kind of felt like this is my second chance at The Sound of Music, and just hoped for the best, and it worked out very well for me.
Tell us what it feels like to do this role, to actually do this role that you've thought about for such a long time. I mean, are there ways in which the role feels different, I mean, theatrically or musically, from what you might imagined it being for you?
It's been more of a marathon than I expected it to be, I guess. it's tiring. I'm either on stage or changing my clothes all the time, so it keeps me moving. I hardly sit down during the course of the show, so it's tiring, but it's fun and it's thrilling, and I'm so excited to get to do it.
It's also probably was a surprise when you first looked at the score and realized how low the role of Maria, in fact, is. I mean, for the movie, all these songs composed for Mary Martin were shifted upwards, sometimes by a third or a fourth. And so you're probably singing these songs not the way you've sort of sung them most of your life.
That's true. I am definitely more familiar with the movie and probably have sung along with the movie soundtrack more than I have with the Broadway musical. But I was familiar with it since I did do it in high school. But I guess I hadn't ever sung a lot of these songs in the keys that they're in. So that's been a bit of a challenge for me, too. My range is not as low as it is high, but I've tried to adapt.
It's worked out just great. You sound wonderful in the part. You truly do. And, Doug, I think you're really pleased not only with how well Samantha is acting and singing this role, but the wonderful sense of chemistry that she seems to achieve with the youngsters who play the Von Trapp family. Maybe you should say a word about the floodgates opening up and how many talented children came out to audition for this production and what it was like to have to whittle down that number to seven.
Well, it was very difficult because we had a lot of kids and they're very talented, but it was really hard to try to find a group that could look like they belonged in the same family. And I think you and I discussed this early, to what degree do they need to look similar? And we said, well, let's just see who tries out. We're going to try to cast the best kids, but if the best kids also happen to look alike or the same height or the one's a little taller or shorter. And I felt really bad because we were lining them up in straight lines and who's taller than who and, you know, what their hair color looked like. And we tried to explain to the kids that really wasn't about who was best. It was about who fit in to this world we were trying to create and this family that we were trying to create. So we could have cast the show, you know, with 10 different sets of talented kids, except for the 10-year-old can't be taller than the 16-year-old. And so that was one of the issues that we came in with. So it was all about how they looked together, how they worked together, how they sounded together, and would the audience believe they were part of a family.
Mm. And I think you'd probably agree that we really ended up hitting the jackpot in terms of not only how beautifully they sing, but how charming they are and how good they are together.
You know, they're all very charming when you start out, and they're all very shy with each other, and then they just get too. No, it's just, they're all great kids, and they're all full of energy and spark, and they're a lot of fun. And you know, it's nice to also see what this means to them. You know, when you do so many plays a year, you kind of go, oh, this is my job, and we got to work on this, and it's late. And, you know, their parents have to drag them kicking and screaming from the theater. Mm. You know, they come early, and they stay late, and sometimes they're not truthful with their parents about when to pick them up because they want to stay, and they're having the time of their life. And you see that, and you go, and it just kind of invigorates you a little bit to make you happy that you're a part of this and you can make these memories for not only the audience members, but for the cast members. I also did the show. I played Franz the butler, and I really wanted to be Ralph. Mm. So I'm living through that tragedy in my life as well. So everybody, we should have a club. All those people that didn't get cast the way they wanted in The Sound of Music, we could, you know, have a party or something.
Or a support group. A
support group.
Or both. So, Samantha, say a word about what it's like to be on stage with this group of children and what a difference it makes in terms of your own performance as Maria.
They are so much fun, and they have been so much fun. They're just so cute and charming and talented, and I've been having a great time with them. The vast majority of them are taller than me, which is a little ridiculous, but can't help it. So we've been having a really good time together. I think I've hit it off pretty well with them, and I think we work together well. Mm. So it's been fun.
And Doug, I think you'd agree that we were especially fortunate to be able to cast Talia Engstrom as Liesl, the oldest of the Von Trapp children, who many will remember from the Les Mis production for her performance as Cosette. But what a huge difference she's made, not only on stage, but behind the scenes and herding these children around. And
we used to have to have one of the crew people used to be the child wrangler, is what we called them confidentially, and that's get the kids in the right place and get them going and get them dressed. And she's the older sister, and she acts like the older sister, and she's wonderful. She gets everybody in place, and she's such a musical talent that she can really help them vocally backstage and, you know, getting them started on the right pitch and where they need to be, and she does it with a smile and a care and a hug. And so it's not like a teacher. It's like a big sister. So that worked out very nicely.
Absolutely. And, of course, we haven't yet mentioned the really crucial role of Captain Von Trapp. And what a tricky part that is to play well, and especially for whoever performs that role to travel the arc that the captain travels from the start of the show to the end. So say a word about that and about our captain, Bob Benson.
Well, it's hard to be a jerk and mean and lovable all at the same time. And Bob has the ability to be that way. And we talked about that because he has to make a transition. People have to like him and understand what his journey is and why he is the way he is. And so I think Bob has such a tender soul to start with. I think that, as I said, the second act is easy for you because it's all about your heart, and he's very good at that. It took him a little bit to be gruff and distant. And I think that's where we came to the meeting of the minds on that, because he's not angry, he's not mean, he's distant, and he's polite and firm and professional. And this is a job, and this is how he approaches it, and it's everything's professional. Mm. And
He's not a monster.
He's not a monster. He's not mean. He's not, hates his children. He is just professional, and this is what we do, and this is how we do it. And he had forgotten feelings and fun, and Maria reminds him of that. And so Bob has done a really nice job of being able to do both and not be Jekyll and Hyde, where there's two different characters in Act 1 and Act 2. So, and he's got a great voice, so that all helps.
Right. When I recently saw The Sound of Music at the Lyric Opera of Chicago, it was an amazing production, and it was also reminded me of what a great stage show this is. But one of the things I was really struck by is how this show is so much about grief, in a sense. I mean, although I don't think most people think of it as a grief-stricken kind of show, mm-hmm. we don't think of it as particularly dark. If we think of it being dark, we think about the Nazis being the darkness of the show. But, of course, the story, in a sense, has this backdrop of grief, because you have this man and you have these children who are recovering from a terrible loss. And of course, for the captain, his way of dealing with this terrible loss is to retreat back into his life in the military and the sense of order which that gave him, not realizing that wasn't the way to help his children through the same grief that they're experiencing. So
that's true. I think his story is kind of sad. He doesn't know how to deal with his children because they remind him too much of his wife and the singing and the joy, and probably looks at one of his daughters and reminds him of his loss. And he tries to find that through proposing to another woman and realizes that that's not what he needs and what he wants. And Maria is also lost in a certain way. She doesn't know which way to go. And she finds her direction through the children as well. So, you know, it's more a love story than it is about Nazis and, you know, getting, you know, that part of the play is very small compared to the raising a family and finding love and compassion.
Right. Samantha, maybe you could say a word about this, the role that you have to play, not only in this becoming a mother figure for these children, but then also this love story that unfolds between you and the captain, a love that you don't expect to be there and which leaves you very, very bewildered. I should think that's a really amazing and satisfying challenge for you as an actress to get to make your way through a story like that and to bring it to life.
It has been. A lot of people in this play change a lot throughout the course of the story, and Maria is no exception. I think Maria thinks she knows what she wants, and ends up, you know, like you said, very, very confused about how she's feeling. She has these feelings that she's never had before, and, you know, doesn't quite know what to do with them. So different people kind of lead her to, you know, eventually following her own heart and realizing that she has to do that. She can't just say, this is my plan, I'm just going to keep doing it. She has to accept the change, and she eventually does that.
And, of course, one of the major figures that helps Maria make these realizations is the Mother Abbess, which is also a really interesting and crucial part. And I'm sure as you were listening to all kinds of people, you were anxious to have just the right person to inhabit that critically important
inhabit
role.
It? Yeah, inhabit the heaven.
So to speak.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, we laugh about this a lot in the cast, about some of the over dramatic moments, and it's hard to say some corny 1940s dialogue in a believable way that the audience won't chuckle at. I think, what was the one that we laughed at so much? Oh, Maria, wear that dress, it's so soft and white. And I don't know, is it something like that,
something
where it's
like
the kids are going to go, ew! And, you know, to modern audiences. And seeing this nun in her habit, you know, people doing the cross and kissing her ring and all of this, it takes a very special person to be able to pull that off to a modern audience and still be likable and not be distant. And Tammy is a lot of fun. And if those people may remember her as Mrs. Gloop in Willy Wonka, and or the wardrobe in Beauty and the Beast. So she's a very gifted comedic actress, which she has to put aside for this and just be very loving. And she has a spark about her. And, you know, we talked about her songs. There's not a lot to do in her songs. Just stand there and sing. Mm. And, you know, for an actor, you feel kind of naked about that. There's no dance number. There's no blocking except for go to the window and sing from your heart. And she does. And it's really great. And to a certain degree, I like it better than the movie because you're there. You're really close to this person, and you can feel the power. And to me, that is much more dramatic than seeing someone sing a powerful song in a movie. I think the audience will really be impressed with the performance. And I was telling Samantha today how much fun, or I think I was telling Tammy, I'm sorry, I didn't tell you, how much fun the song in the beginning is when Raindrops on Roses, they're just having so much fun together. And so the audience will have fun. And they're not doing much. They're, you know, twirling each other around and hugging each other, and it's just right, and it's fun. And so, you know, there are a lot of characters in the play that have to be kind of bigger than life. I think the Mother Abbess is one, but all the nuns. All of a sudden, you see 20 nuns come out and sing, and and Kara, who's our choreographer, did a really nice job of making it believable, if a musical can be believable.
Yeah, that's true. Samantha, I'm sure you must enjoy these scenes you get to do with Tammy Zeller as the Mother Abbess. I'm actually really curious, not so much about the wonderful duet you get to sing, My Favorite Things, which, unlike the movie, is sung between Maria and the Mother Abbess, but I'm actually curious to know what it's like for you to stand right next to Tammy as she sings Climb Every Mountain and, you know, blows the roof off the place, and you get to just stand there and listen. I just wonder, does that feel, is that at all strange or awkward or deafening, or I mean, what's that like to be part of that really dramatic moment, but by the time that song begins, really all you're doing is listening?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I told Tammy early in the rehearsal process, I think one of the first times I heard her sing that song, that I was so glad that I got to be on stage and listen to her sing that for every single performance, because she does it beautifully, and it is very, very powerful. It's interesting. I don't know that I ever have had to stand on stage and just listen to someone sing, but, you know, I love that moment. I love all of my scenes with her.
It's really hard for an actor to just listen and not participate in something and do something. You know, we talk about that with the kids a lot. Just stand there and listen. It's hard. And but you can tell that the person's listening. The person you're playing opposite, you can just tell that they're together, they're listening, and they're feeding off of each other's energy when they look at each other. And I told them when we were working the scene, I said, I don't want to block this. Okay, on this word, you two look together and touch on this word. I want you to feel that. And they've done an amazing job of working together. And sometimes she spins you twice. Sometimes today, I think she spun you four times. And they're laughing and they're hugging and they're just working as a team, you know. And they listen to each other and react to each other. And to me, that's the magic of theater. It's not something on this word you touch her shoulder and then on this word she touches your hand, that the two of them just are feeling it and having a lot of fun. And if they have fun, the audience will have fun.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Doug Instanis, the director of the Racine Theater Guild's The Sound of Music, and Samantha Sustacek is Maria. We're going to let Samantha go in just a second. Samantha, I'm just curious. This question will probably surprise you a little bit. You were part of the huge cast of Les Mis, this big show that we did a few months ago. But you weren't the center of that cast the way you're the center of The Sound of Music. I'm just wondering, how different does it feel to be, you've had supporting roles, you've had leading roles, and I'm just curious, from that show to this show, how different does this feel to suddenly, as you were saying, to be so central that you scarcely get to sit down, you scarcely get to catch your breath? I mean, are you ever sorry that you wish to have, you know, a role like this? Because, you know, what a responsibility it is.
It definitely is. I mean, like I said, it is a dream come true to play this role, but I have also felt a lot of pressure. I mean, I've had people say to me, well, Maria is The Sound of Music, and, you know, like, thank you for saying that. No, a lot of things are The Sound of Music, and a lot of people are The Sound of Music, but there definitely has been, I guess I've put a lot of pressure on myself to do the best that I possibly can with it, to compare this show to Les Mis is hard.
I'm sure.
I had a lot to do in that show, honestly, too. I certainly wasn't the center of anything, but
I think it's really cool, Doug, to see the way in which Samantha has made this role her own through this rehearsal process. But I know that right from the audition, the first audition, when we heard an array of very talented people who could have done a fine job with this role, but there was something you saw that, that we both saw, but especially that you saw that led you to make this choice. Just talk about what that was.
Well, it's hard. There's a lot of talented people, but, I never know if it's a good thing or a bad thing if I've worked with somebody in the past, because, some people will say, it's good that I've seen them on stage before, and some people say it's bad that I haven't, that I've seen them on stage before, because as a director, you maybe pigeonhole people, or, you know, new people, you don't know their flaws. You know, they come in and they're, whoa, that was a great audition, and then you find out, oh, okay, later on that they weren't good. But one of the things that, you know, certain actors you're just drawn to because of something. Maybe not their voice or their look or something. And to me,
something intangible.
Something intangible. That, why do I watch that person over another person? You line, you know, 20 people up and your eye goes to somebody else. And it doesn't have anything to do with taller, shorter, blonde hair, dark hair. There's just something about them. And, you know, one of the things that I've always written on Samantha's cards is great energy and killer smile. And, you know, she can light up a room with her smile. And I think that in Maria, you know, just stand there and smile, and everybody goes, oh, you know, and they want to hug you, and you like them. And it's, you know, and I think, you know, I think that's what stood out to me about Samantha's work in general, is that she's got this killer smile and this twinkle in her eyes that I think Maria has to have. You know, obviously she's got to be able to sing. Obviously she has to be able to act, all of those things. But I think to me that's what stood out in all of her performances, is that she's got the ability to just make the kids run to her and love her. You know, so there's a childlike quality without being immature, you know what I mean? Because you can be one of the kids and the captain won't have anything to do with you. But, you know, she, I don't know, maybe because she's got kids of her own and she's used to being a mom and being very loving and understanding. So anyway, that's, I think, what the audience will like about Samantha, besides her nice voice and her pretty dresses and her chemistry, that is just, she has the ability of making you like her by just smiling.
Yeah, we want to like Maria. It's a long musical if you don't care for the Maria, that's for sure. Samantha, do you have a favorite moment in this show that you want people to really watch for or listen for?
Oh, I have so many favorite moments.
It's the kissing. They like the kissing.
I think, and I was just talking about this with the kids, and they agree with me, that we love to do The Lonely Goat Herd, which is not the same at all as it is in the movie. It's not a puppet show. It's not marionettes. It takes place during the thunderstorm in the bedroom, and instead of my favorite things, that's in a different place, too. So we just have a lot of fun with The Lonely Goat Herd, and I love to sing that song. It's just fun.
Yeah, it's tough, but yeah, you do a great job, as do they.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a wonderful moment among many. Well, Samantha, you've had a long night, and I'm going to ask a couple more questions of Doug, but I think it's time for you to head home to your loving, patient family. That's got to make a big difference, too, in terms of you being able to do this. I remember at the start of one of the rehearsals where we were kind of working out when you would come, I remember you saying something about, well, my mother-in-law can come and watch the kids for such and such a time. And I mean, nobody does this alone, but, you know, I mean, I know for you this has particularly been a kind of a team effort to make this possible.
It definitely is. I took about a five-year break from theater to have my two kids and just got back into it last year, and I'm very, very, very glad to be back, but yeah, I definitely couldn't do it without my husband and the rest of my family. My mom, his mom, they take care of my kids for me so I can be here.
Very good. Well, we're glad you're here, and we hope a lot of people are going to turn out to see you and all your castmates in The Sound of Music. Thanks for making time for this. Sleep well, okay?
Thank you.
Doug, just a couple more things. We were talking about the wonderful kids that are the Von Trapps. I was just wondering if you wanted to say a quick word about the special challenge that is involved in directing children, especially some of whom are pretty darn young, among the youngest children probably who've ever been in a main stage production here. What are the challenges for you, and do you enjoy those challenges?
Well, one of the things that we talked about early on is how young are these kids going to be? But we have a lot of late nights, a lot of long rehearsals, evening performances, and kids go to bed early, and they have school, and they have other things in their life. So the Theater Guild has made it a kind of a policy of not casting kids under the younger than 10. And even that is young, but in this play, they're supposed to be, you know, 6 and 7 and stuff. So we try to find younger-looking kids, but the bottom level is 10. So, but even that, you know, staying up till 11 o'clock at night is tough, and the parents don't like that either. So we try to rehearse early. We try to get them we try not to call them to rehearsals that they don't have a lot to do, but it makes it difficult in the end to really make sure that they have their energy and that they've got their sleep so they don't get sick. Mm-hmm. We've had children get sick before, and we don't have any understudies at the Theater Guild. So if one of them comes down, it's I can't go on for them. So, but these kids are all really excited and really enthusiastic. And it's amazing, you know, the kids know all the lines in the play. Mm. So if ever an adult makes a mistake, there's some child there waiting to tell them what their line is or where they're supposed to be.
Mm.
I think the thing that's important is to try to make sure they're consistent. And we actually talked about that today in rehearsal. All of a sudden, some new things started to appear, which were not necessarily bad things, but they're would have been things that we would have talked about 2 weeks ago, that we don't start changing things at the last minute, mm. Even if they are a good idea.
Right.
And
of course, even adults are tempted to do that, but I suppose children are maybe even a little more apt to not understand how much that can throw off another performer and so on.
Right. And they start off being, as I was joking before, they start off being very shy and polite and quiet. And then once they become part of the theater family and they get comfortable, they go wild, and wild in a good way. They love everything and everyone, and they're very interested in everything that's going on. So we really want to, we need to harness that. We need to keep them positive and fun and yet professional and consistent in what we do.
We have just a couple more people that we really should talk about, because there are a couple of the most interesting characters in the cast, and it would be a shame if we didn't at least mention them, and I think we need to do even more than that. There is the really critical role of the Baroness.
Oh, absolutely.
And in the stage version, she actually sings, which is not the way it is in the film. But she is a critical role, and I should think it's one of the trickiest roles to bring off.
Yeah, and Stacy plays that role, and it's kind of funny because Stacy is the real life mother of the girl that plays Gretel. So they've been able to experience the joy of being in a show together, even though there's only, I think, one or two scenes that they're actually in together. But the Baroness is, because it's kind of a sad thing. She really does like the captain, and he realizes that he doesn't love her, and that's kind of sad. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing really to dislike about her. It's just that she's not Maria.
Right.
And so they have a couple songs that they sing, How Can Love Survive and No Way to Stop It, which is two fun songs that aren't in the movie. And she gets to wear some great costumes, mm-hmm. and it's got some great lines, and so she's got to be it's a great role, and I'm glad Stacy agreed to do it.
Mm. And in a sense, kind of opposite her a little bit is the role of Max, who is kind of a wheeler dealer in the background, and of course he has a big role to play in the Von Trapps actually getting on stage as a singing group and so on. And that's also a kind of a tricky character that can be, in a sense, played very slimy, and not in this case is he played slimy.
Right. Frank Russ plays that role for us, and it is tricky because he is a wheeler and dealer, and he tries to convince the captain just to go along, just wait for it all to blow over. And I think that, you know, he also has a line that says, you know, I don't have any political convictions, can I help it if other people do? And he's trying to ride out the storm like many people did. And to a certain degree, that's understandable. He wants to live his life and not go to jail or suffer the consequences. So I guess people can see that as kind of a slimy type of person, but Frank doesn't do it that way. Frank does it as Uncle Frank and the likable guy that wants everybody to get along and, you know, hug, you know, type of thing.
Absolutely. And there is also the character of Rolf, who is, of course, the young man who, at the start of the play, is very much in love with Liesl, and they sing that really beloved duet, I'm 16 going on 17. And Rolf, of course, is a character who undergoes quite dramatic, drastic change over the course of the show. And that's also something not necessarily easy to bring off in believable fashion. And I, for one, think the young man you cast in that role is really doing that well.
I think his role kind of describes to me, or makes me think of, kind of the universal feeling of the average guy in Germany at that time. That they started off to be nice, and then they got caught up in something, something that made them think that it was bigger and better. He got manipulated. And so I think that character, while it's very small, I think it's important, because how the youth get manipulated, and they throw away what they knew as being right, and got carried away in a bad situation. I also think there's a couple of ways of playing that. There's a scene where he comes to deliver a telegram, and he goes, you could see that either he's yelling at Liesl or he's warning Liesl about what's coming, that you know, better, if he knows what's good for him, he will, you know, get on the right side and be careful. So that can either be a threat or a warning. And I think the way Ian is playing it is a warning. And I think that makes him more likable, saying, you know, this is happening and you've got to be careful.
Mm. I want people to know how beautifully I think you've exploited this particular space, that is the Racine Theater Guild, for a couple of the most dramatic scenes in this show. I mean, without giving away too much, I mean, the best way to appreciate that is to just come and see it for yourself. But I wonder if you could just say a word about this particular space, this kind of amphitheater seating, and the way in which, I mean, once in a while it's a big pain in the butt because it makes certain things really tricky. But on the other hand, it certainly makes certain really glorious stage pictures possible that would not be with a standard proscenium stage with a curtain.
I think one of the wonderful things about our theater is, especially when we're doing children's programming, is that the actors can get very close to the audience. And I think that makes it exciting for the kids. Instead of sitting 50 rows back and seeing them way far away from you, you get to experience them close up. And so we exploit the aisles. We exploit what we call the gutter, which is the front row of the theater. And we allow the actors to use that. Again, in our space, the hills are not alive. So when they go up to the mountains, they go through the audience and out. And that is not only a nice stage picture, but it also gets the actors really close to the audience. And especially with the kids, they'll love that.
Mm-hmm.
During the wedding scene, coming down the aisle and seeing her gown flow down the stairs is a beautiful picture. And one of the neat things about the play that we're doing instead of the movie is it starts off with the nuns coming to morning prayers, and we've done that in a very dramatic way that I think the kids will be excited by, instead of just a bunch of nuns walking around for no apparent reason. You know, we've got candles and dim lights, and having them come through the audience makes it a little more exciting for the kids. And I just think that's the excitement of live theater, is being so close that you can see the sweat coming down the person's brow, and to be a part of that and be a part of the action. And I think that's what makes our space unique. And I think people will give up the hills in the movie to see Maria 5 feet away from her.
Absolutely. And really singing.
Right.
Not lip syncing to a pre-recorded track, but right there, lifting up these beautiful songs. So explain to our listeners when the Sound of Music is being performed. And, of course, as we touched on already, some of the performances are actually during the day for school children.
Right. We open, as I said, this week for the daytime performances, and we do two a week. Our public performances start December 5th and run through the 21st. Now, some of the performances have already sold out. We do have tickets available for a lot of the Saturday shows. We've also changed the performance time. Instead of 7:30 at night, we start at 7, which gives, you know, people a little chance to go home to bed if they're bringing young people. So we have some matinees, and the evening performances start at 7, and they can call the box office or go online or just stop by the Theater Guild. Many ways that we can get your money.
Very good. So, of course, you can go to, is the website racinetheater.org? Okay. And the phone number in the box office?
262-633-4218.
All right. Doug Instanis, this has been a long day for you, even longer than any in the cast. So I appreciate you giving us some of the background on this wonderful score and this terrific production of The Sound of Music. Best wishes to you and the whole cast and crew.
Thank you.
I'm Gregory Berg.
And to finish out today's morning show, here is a little more of the original orchestral suite from The Sound of Music, arranged by the great Robert Russell Benedict. It's a minute before 9 o'clock on WGTD. Tomorrow on the morning show, best-selling author W. Bruce Cameron, whose latest book is called The Dogs of Christmas, a really beautiful and inspiring novel. And on Friday, Brian Albrecht, the president of Gateway Technical College.
WGTD is supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. More information about undergraduate and adult education opportunities at carthage.edu. Support also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, a proud supporter of WGTD's morning show. Sunny today, a high of 37 degrees, clear overnight, a low of 18. A little cloudier tomorrow with a slight chance of snow showers and a high of 33. Friday's high, 39. This is WGTD HD.